It's Wednesday, December 8th, 2010, and you're listening to episode 215 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 54 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
My name is Pat.
And my name is Chris.
Chad?
Yo.
I'm sure it's going to break everyone's hearts, but we have no announcements today. We got a bunch of stuff to talk about Fear the Con, but we will save that for next time. Chad, we do, however, have something here to talk about, which is in your week off from the recording, you normally go to a board game meetup group, and it's my understanding that at that group this past week, you ended up in a dungeon crawl that you enjoy.
Yes.
Yep. I have the text message here right now. We're at dinner. And I get the text message from Chad. I just jumped into a 4th edition D&D dungeon crawl. I am having to bite my tongue to stop talking in voice or doing any RP.
In fact, you were playing, was it a gnome?
No.
Or
No, gnomes are not characters in 4th edition.
They're
gnomes
monsters. No, they are characters again.
No, gnomes are monsters, those little bastards.
In Player Handbook.
Wow, I'm a monster.
I have a treasure table.
You know, it's funny,
it's
funny you should ask what he's playing, because the very next text is, I can't do my gnome voice as I'm playing Merrick, male halfling thief. That is the full extent of my character. I'm so excited.
That's all it says on this character sheet as far as like fluff or anything in character related. I go down to a hobby store on my off week, and it's a meetup.com. There's the St. Louis board game meetup group that I'm a part of, and that one of their many, many meetups around St. Louis is at the one near my house. And so I go to that one. And it's usually just board games all night, and all the Euro-style board games and such. And I went there, I got there a little late, and I picked up some dinner, and I go, and not everybody had shown up yet, because traffic was really bad. The people who were there were a couple of people I had never seen before, and they were all playing a board game. And so I walk in, and there's different rooms and different groups. I walk into this one room, and I'm like, hi, and what are you guys playing? And they're just setting up this. It's like, oh, we're playing such and such game. I don't even remember, but it's only 4-player. And
it's just a nice way of saying go away.
Well, the woman looks at me and she goes, well, what's your name? And I go, oh, well, I'm Chad. Oh, I've never met you before. Well, see you later. And I'm like,
wow, bitch.
And I'm just like, okay. And so I just turn around and walk away. Usually all of my interactions, except that one with the board game group, have been really, really super positive.
Right.
And I just think that person wasn't quite thinking. So anyway, I kind of go around, and there's like a Pokemon tournament going on. And then there's this full up, can't possibly stop this game that we haven't started yet to get a game that seats 5 people group. And then that's it. And I go into this one side room. Fantasy Flight has put out a Ravenloft board game.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be awesome.
Yeah.
Right. And I really want to play this.
Yeah. I'm dying to try it. I mean, it looks like a lot of fun. Yeah.
So I see these people sitting at a table, and they have that box sitting there, right? And I go in there, and I'm going to try to insinuate myself into the game if I can. And I'm like, oh, hi. And they're like, hi, what's your name? I'm like, oh, hey, nice to meet you. Haven't seen you around, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, is that the Ravenloft board game over there? And they're like, oh, yeah, it is, but we're not playing that. And I'm like, rats. And I'm like, oh, I thought you were playing. And they're like, no, we're playing D&D. Would you like to play? And I stop, and I turn around, and I look at the room behind me with the bitch, and I look back at these guys. I have no idea what they're playing, right? I'm like, I don't want to intrude in your game. It's okay. And they're like, no, this is just a pickup thing that we do every week.
But I did bring a level 1 thief named Boba Fett.
I did. So I sit down, and they explain that they're playing 4th edition, and they're playing D&D Encounters, and it's like some sort of, this is like an
sounds
intro.
Sounds erotic.
Thing. Well, it's like an intro thing, and they have a keep
dear
on the board.
D&D letters.
They have keep on the
board. I never thought this would happen to me, but guess what?
What?
No, that's the D&D letters.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
D&D 4.
Pat, you know exactly what I'm talking about, don't you?
Oh, yeah, well, I'm the one who set the f***ing joke up, Chris. Yeah.
See? About. There you go.
Should you guys just have a separate podcast about Spinhouse letter? Okay.
We totally should.
So anyway, they're doing like keep on the Borderlands or something. It's this D&D Encounters thing. I've never played 4th edition until up until this point. I was curious about it anyway. And they explained to me that this is sort of like an intro thing.
Yeah.
It's not even a full module. It's a little bit of fluff text.
That's exactly what the D&D encounters are. Yeah. They're stripped down, simplified sort of intros to the game.
Yeah, exactly. They're to get people interested in the game. I ask them, well, rules-wise, are we missing rules? Or is it stuff kind of... And they're like, well, I mean, they don't have some of the deeper stuff, but this is the rules. This is how it goes. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. And so... we start playing the game, and it is. It's just there's a little bit of fluff at the beginning, and it's an encounter. There's a trap and some monsters, and that's it. That's all you do. And I had a lot of fun, mainly because it was new and novel. These people are really awesome. We took 4 times longer than we should have because we were just jawing. Just because we just kept on yakking and talking, and it was very social, friendly. We were talking about Doctor Who. We were talking about anime. I mean, we're nerds in a room, right? So anyway, what we were playing, it was 2 guys. Another guy was a dungeon master. A woman who was sharing her pretzels with me. It was very nice. And the guy's 5-year-old daughter was playing. The game master was teaching his daughter math skills by playing D&D encounters. So we would tell her, it's like, okay, honey, it's your turn. And we're like, what do you want to do? She's playing this dwarf female warrior, right? And they were leaning over me.
Sounds like a typical weekend for Pat.
Yeah. Well, and they lean over to me and they're like, this warrior she's playing is outrageously powerful. I mean, it just destroys things. Everything is pre-gen. So they weren't like giving her gimmies or anything like that. And the guy was telling me that he thinks that this character is something you would give to a kid. It doesn't have any special powers. It doesn't have any of the timed abilities. It doesn't have any complex tactical thing. It just walks up to an enemy and smashes face. And the kids get to roll a whole lot of dice. So she's like, I'm going to hit this guy with my hammer. And she's like really excited about it. And she takes out this dice bag, right? And this dice bag has a Godzilla patch on it. And she upends her dice. We are talking pretty in pink dice. These are the most girly, pink, sparkly, and gold glitter dice you have ever seen.
You were jealous, weren't you?
Oh, man.
She was
borrowing
Pat's dice bag.
So she was separating out the dice, and she's like, the big round one's the D20. And she's like, which one should I take? And she's got a gold one and a pink one and a blue one. And I lean over to her. I'm like, use the gold one. And she's like, really? I'm like, yeah. She's like, okay. She goes to roll, right? And we have been rolling crap. We have just been rolling crap. These things are kicking our ass. So she takes her dice, first roll that she does, and she goes, whoa, 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 whoa. She's making the sound, right? And she's like shaking her arms back and forth and back and forth, and she's looking at each of us with these wide eyes going, whoa, and she throws it, boom, 20. And she's like, ah, I got a 20. And she starts jumping up and down, and we're all like, yeah! It's just like she's hugging her dad, and her dad's giving her high fives, and she's really excited about this. And so he's
Chariots
like,
"The fire is playing in the background."
Oh my god, it is! And she's just it was infectious to see how excited she was. And so her dad's like, "Okay, roll these dice," or no, it's like roll these dice for the damage. And so she has to roll like 2D something. I mean, she does a lot of friggin' damage with her just smash face. And so she has one of those addition charts, a chart that is numbered 1 to 100. And so she's at like a +7. So she counts out, okay, there's a 7, and she rolls X on the dice. And her dad's like, okay, you rolled X, like 12 or something. Like I said, smash face. And so count from 7. And she takes her pin out. She goes 1, 2, 3, blah, blah, blah. Counts. And then she looks at her dad. She's like, I got a. And it's something like 28, which is outrageous, but accurate. And so she does the math thing, and he marks it off, and she's like, you destroyed him. Yay. It was really cool. Of course, she was bored when it wasn't her turn because she's a 5-year-old little girl. And she takes out her pink Nintendo DS with the Disney princess's carrying case on it. And I'm kind of leaning over to try and see what game she's playing. But it was really interesting. It was really cool people. It was a game system I had never played before. And it was just really cool.
There's something I'm willing to say once and only once before immediately changing the subject, just because I don't want to linger on this. But just to cool off hell a little bit, I do want to go on record as saying you played and enjoyed a fourth edition game.
I did. You see, I know you didn't want to get into the alignment. We don't want to get into the alignment wank. We don't want to get into the edition wank. I enjoyed fourth edition.
Right.
Beyond the game, beyond enjoying spending time with those people, those strangers, and enjoying the situation and having fun with that little girl and all that sort of stuff, I enjoyed the rule system.
All right, so let me
I thought
say,
it was very streamlined.
I'm actually jealous of your experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously no secret that most of the people on this show mm-hmm. lean more towards role-playing than right. tactical. I don't know per se that, quite frankly, these are some mutually exclusive ideas, but if for a moment we presume they were, then we lean more towards role-playing than tactical. Oh,
if you could only have one of the two in a game, we would choose
we'll put it
the
that
role-playing.
Way.
We're on a desert island.
I do have to put a caveat in there. I got to talking to these guys because, again, I didn't know how into RP they were, and I didn't want to bust out the fangs and the cape and the voices and stuff when that would make them uncomfortable, so I really held back. In fact,
that's
actually
something I was going to ask you, is if you thought about trying that.
We didn't do it, but I brought it up in a different way. I asked them what other games they were into, and they said they were into all of these like heavy-duty games and all these tactical game stuff, and they said that they really wanted to get into more RP. And the game master said, you know, I have this idea for, and this is probably not going to mean much to you, Dan, but to all the Doctor Who fans out there, they'll be like, they'll have heart palpitations because I want this guy to come to Fear the Con and run this game. He wants to run a Dread game with the Jenga Tower.
Right.
And he wants to run a Doctor Who game with no Doctor, none of the other stuff, throughout the chronology, a canon of Doctor Who, many times within the show's history, in the future Earth history. The Daleks have completely taken over and enslaved the entire human population on the Earth. He wants to take one of those time periods, and the people who are playing are survivors who are in a Dalek slave camp on Earth, and that you will fight for your freedom and you will use the Dread rules doing it. Completely narrative, very dark, very deadly, very vicious.
That
game.
Is a pretty big jump from Keep on the Borderlands or whatever encounter
yes,
you guys
yes.
are doing. That's a,
and I was
wow.
like, that sounds like a really good game.
That's like sitting in the desert building a boat. I mean,
gotta ask you though.
Yeah.
And even though you may not have said any more about your character than here's my class and my race, mm-hmm. did you find yourself though, when you're going through the dungeon crawl, essentially imprinting some sort of personality on this character or giving it some sort of life, even internally?
No, not really.
Because, I mean, you even do that in board
yes,
games.
I
mean,
yes,
we did that on Hero Quest a lot.
It's because it's too social.
Well, say, from hearing you tell the story, the way that I'm hearing it is there are people out there who really enjoy the tactical aspect mm-hmm. of a game. Min-maxing the numbers and making sure their guy's in the right mm-hmm. place and they set up the best combos and pick out the best feats and all that kind of stuff really drives the game for them.
Yeah.
Now, while I can enjoy that in certain games, and I think throughout this podcast, there's a gradient of how much each of us could enjoy that, I don't think it's a real stretch to say that in your case, that sort of game will generally not hold your attention very long.
Not really.
And
not.
Even for me, it's only going to hold my attention in very short bursts.
Right.
And it sounds like the reason this game worked was because it was not a heads-down, mm-hmm. tactically focused game. It was a social party. It was a
yes,
beer and pretzels
very
game
much so.
That had the backdrop of...
It is nerds locked in a room.
But it had
it
a backdrop
awesome.
Of a
yes.
fourth edition dungeon crawl.
Yes, totally.
Yeah, and I mean, I can't say how much that... I am really jealous mm-hmm. of your experience. I haven't run into that when I've gone to the board game meetup groups. It's always been board game. I have a lot of fun with it. I would love to jump in just a game like that just mm-hmm. to experience it. And I mean... The idea of seeing a father teach his kid how mm-hmm. to play D&D there at the table, that's just heartwarming.
Yeah, yeah. And her really getting into it. And he said that he has another kid who's kind of coming up in age, and his plan is to, like, alternate them out, depending on the game, or like, he has or something about he had an older one, and he's going to have her cycle into their more RP-edged games and stuff. But no, it was really cool. It was a lot of fun. And I have to say that they brought up the topic of podcast. Actually, they were bitching about the RPG tools that they were using that Wizards of the Coast puts out and about how much they suck.
I've not heard a lot of good feedback
and
there.
The guy
so.
Had an iPad. He was saying, oh, yeah, I'm really looking forward. Do you know of any good tools for RPGs? It doesn't have to be D&D specific. I'm like, yeah, check out this thing called RPG Toolkit. You know, it's a pretty cool thing, and blah, blah, blah. And somehow he wrote it down. He was really excited about it. And we got into the discussion of podcasts. I didn't bring it up. They started bringing it up. The Game Master enjoys actual plays. And so I just kind of floated so have you ever heard of a podcast called Fear the Boot? And he goes, yeah, those guys are, and he makes the talking motion with his hands. This is like, yak, yak, yak. He's like, I get tired of that. And I just want to hear the actual plays. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. That's cool. I get that.
That's so awesome.
It is.
And by the end of the night.
You may not like me, but you've heard of me.
By the end of the
Don't
night.
Don't hate me because I'm beautiful.
We got to talking about conventions, and I was like, I'm trying my damnedest not to mention the show because I feel like such a heel. And finally, the way the conversation kind of went, I finally had to bring up, it's like, and there's this convention. It's in St. Charles. And I do this podcast called Fear the Boot. And
he has podcasting shame.
And so, yeah, and one guy was like, oh, yeah, I might check it out. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. Don't, you know, it's up to you. And the one guy's like, yeah, well, I might listen to it again. I'm like, you don't have to. It's cool. It's cool, man.
No, you don't have to like
it.
Look, we don't like things other people do. People don't have to like what we do. I mean, I totally accept that as that's part of putting yourself out there creatively. Not everybody's going to like your style, like your approach. And that's the beauty of podcasting is because of the fact that the distribution scales so well.
Yeah,
you can have a podcast with an audience of 5 or 5 million, and that's totally cool. You know, you can make something that's real niche. We can make something that only people like us like.
Yeah,
and that's the beauty of it. And on the flip side, there's great actual plays out there. You know, RPPR does a lot of actual play stuff. They're a great show, and so there's certainly no shortage of that stuff out there as well, and more power to those shows. So,
yeah,
you know, going with that philosophy, Pat, the more I think about it, I think maybe you and I should do our own damn show.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, nobody can make the little hand talking motion because, you know, you'd have to talk in order to earn that.
They would make the button pressing motion. For
that's right. They'd make like the little talking hand, but just hold its mouth shut, like your hand, your fingers just stay touched
can
together.
Can you do a motion for a soundboard? How do you do that?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think there'd be a problem. I don't think there'd be a problem because if there was no trying to keep it under the explicit tag, I think Pat would be fine. He'd just go on and on and on and on like he normally does.
Yeah, that's true.
I think a podcast called Brown Eye would be successful.
Yeah. Well, before we get too deep into that, I have to say, if any of those guys are listening, or woman or girl for that matter, although I doubt she is, I really enjoyed playing that game with you guys. It was a lot of fun. You guys are cool people. I'd totally do it again in a heartbeat.
There is definitely Chad.
Yeah, there is definitely Chad.
No, there's definitely Chad. There's no doubt about that. There actually is a real benefit to these types of things. I mean, there's a really good feeling that does come out of these types of settings. And it's not necessarily always in con games, but when you have these little tiny gatherings like this, and it is just that get together. You know, whether it's like a D&D game day or if it's your board game night or something like that, but these social gatherings, they really do a lot for the players themselves to, in a certain way, kind of refresh you and make you just feel better about, A, the hobby that you're doing and kind of reinvigorate you for, you know, your activities that you love to do.
Chris is right. I mean, I guess in a way I feel somewhat ashamed that there shouldn't be an epiphany in that, but I guess for me there is.
That there are cool people out there doing cool things?
Well, more than that.
It's just getting together with those cool people. It's a shared experience amongst people who are unfamiliar with each other. You all know how to play these games, and you all have done them.
Well, exactly. I am most energized about doing this podcast, as an example, when I am most energized to get back on the mics and do this podcast is immediately following Fear the Con. Mm-hmm. After we have spent crazy run-up months getting this ready, had the 2 weeks of panic prior to the con, run ourselves ragged running the con, doing the tourism. We were wiped out. We're on zero sleep.
Great. Now I'm thinking about those 2 weeks.
Well, I know, but the point is, it is the day after Fear of the Con when I am most ready to get back on the mics and record, because interacting with that many cool people that share our love. And in this case, I'm not just talking about the podcast. I'm talking about our concept of the hobby, our enjoyment of these games. It just It's contagious. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is no way you can walk into something like Fear the Con and not walk out excited. I mean, unless you just, for some reason, had a really unusually bad time, which, if that's happened, nobody's told me yet. So I totally see what you're saying, Chris, and that I think I have those experiences on a regular basis, but it's with the same group of people. And so it just kind of starts to become a function of your social circle as opposed to something that constantly re-energizes you because you realize just how many other people there are out there that are this into it. Mm-hmm. And sure, maybe you talk to them on the forums or via email and they're cool people, but that's very different than watching a five-year-old roll her first critical success.
And then we said, you know, maybe we should start rolling our dice like that. It's doing something.
Maybe our dice needs sound effects.
Yeah.
Well, someday I'm going to put out, you know how supposedly early editions of D&D had real spells in them? Mm. Someday I'm going to put out a book of actual dice magic.
Nice.
That has all the hoodoo that I have developed over the years. For getting my dice to roll better. And it totally works.
Oh, totally.
Totally scientifically.
After
proven.
Last totally. Week, I think I need that book.
Wayne, your gross incompetence has nothing to do with my magic. So
it's because I don't have your magic.
Speaking of things that suck.
Are you going to talk about me again?
No, I'm going to talk about how we are now entering into the great vortex of game destruction. The Bermuda Triangle of the calendar.
We got out calendars in our last game to try to map these waters out.
Yeah, and we found that for about the next 6 weeks, there is not a single day that all of us will be available. We found enough days where only one of us might be out, so we could game anyway. Mm-hmm. We found several weeks where more than one of us were going to be out, so we had to cancel. But we're in this Bermuda Triangle of game destruction. Now, we're not going to talk about specifically the ways in which holidays destroy your games. We've talked about that before. Nor are we going to talk about what the group ought to do with your character while you are not there. We've done that one before. May revisit it someday, but that's not what we're doing today. What we want to talk about today is instead something that Wayne brought up, which is when somebody misses a game. Now, the holidays are a good time to think about this, but obviously that's not the only time in the year this happens. But when someone does miss a game, how do you catch that person back up? Let's presume that while they were gone, plot changed, setting may have changed, character relationships may have evolved. They are coming back and having experienced none of this.
But their character did.
But their character did or may have. How do you get them back into this? The one idea I had, but you guys had several others, was make someone responsible for taking some kind of abbreviated notes and catching them up between games on basically what happened. We just had a game in my Friday group where Carla was not able to make it, and Scott was kind enough. I don't think he took notes per se, but just has a really good memory. And he sent her an email explaining everything that had happened in that game, so she'll be ready to go this Friday. And now we're going to have a reverse where Scott's not going to be there, and someone's going to have to catch him up. And I found that I, as a GM, can't do this because the one time I tried, I accidentally let slip a whole bunch of plot that hadn't been revealed yet.
Yeah, and that's the other downside to the GM doing it is the GM knows what was really plot relevant and what wasn't. So the information that the GM would hand someone wouldn't necessarily be the same thing another player would. Another player may have keyed in on side things.
I have to agree with Chris here. Even though I don't practice this, I think that recaps at the beginning of each game, you don't have to do the encyclopedic sort of wiki of every single thing that everybody has done so far.
And then the party camped.
Yes, and then we had turkey. No, my notes say chicken.
And Joe took first watch.
But I think that the GM can give a little recap before each game, and the GM can emphasize certain points that the players aren't quite hooking into, and then...
Well, let's go back to the GM here in a second, because Chris has a point he mentioned that I want to rage on him about for a little bit. But Chad, let's do talk about your...
I got something I got to rage back at you, buddy, but go ahead.
Pre-game review, because yes. The GM doesn't do it.
No.
You have one of us do it, which I'm sure partially
I give out points.
Yeah, which totally matter.
Totally matter. Totally matter. I have the names in my notebook. I actually have a notebook. I have the names of each of the player, and next to the names of each of the player is their character name, so I can, you know, keep that straight. And I give each of the players points if they make me laugh or they do something really interesting or really cool. And I also give out a point at the beginning of each game when I say, okay, who wants to do the recap? Who wants to do the story so far? And different people volunteer to do it. And
I'm a point whore.
Yeah, you're a point whore. And they usually take about 5 minutes to kind of give the story so far.
Yeah, one of the interesting things, too, is sometimes we'll be giving these, and Chad, you as a GM, will be sitting there, oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. That's just because I have no delusion that part
of this
is
why I do it.
Chad doesn't totally remember. Yeah. But the purpose it serves for the group is, first of all, if anyone was not there, they get a chance to catch up on where we're at. And even for people that were there, it gets you back in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's always that kind of first few minutes of when you sit down and game, it takes you a moment to get back into the groove of the events, to get back into your character. And that recollection really serves a secondary purpose of breaking the ice all over again. Now, Chris, let's go ahead and have this out right here and right now. I want you to tell me who
body
you think.
Body blow, left, left. Knock him out. Go ahead, let's hear it. Come on. Come on, bitch. Let's do it.
All right. All right, Glass Joe.
Bring it. Yeah, Glass. No kidding, Glass Joe. Let's see.
Yeah. Step up, Glass Joe. So I'm sorry. Who is it you think should be responsible?
Who is it you think?
Are we still playing Punch Out?
Yes. Yeah, let's do a Punch Out. Yeah,
that's okay. His sound effect.
That's the best I could do for his swing was.
All right.
Continue, Dan.
So, Chris.
Chris is already winning this. I'm sorry, Dan.
Yeah. You are in a point hole here. You need to dig your way out quick.
The war has just begun. So, Chris.
Yes.
You think who should have to do this and why?
In general, the GM should be responsible for this. And I'll tell you why. The GM needs to take the lead, but the players obviously do need to contribute because, there might be certain details. But really, the biggest thing for me, while Wayne was correct to a certain extent that GM might reveal some plot points that are relevant, but at the same time, the GM, when they present the information, is going to do it with a bit more impartiality than the players do, because the players are going to come at it and they're going to give their perception of that, which I think is a little unfair to the guy who was gone, because he may not have looked at them that way. The GM could certainly say, yep, the party went and interacted with this NPC. They didn't like him because he said this and did this, but he didn't really give any necessary motivation for them to feel this way. But yet, at the same time, they ended up not liking them. And it works to the GM's advantage down the road, because then it can create a little bit of skepticism on the missing person's part, so that they're not maybe all geared towards this person or geared towards against this situation. It's just a bit more of an impartial presentation, which I think is important when it comes to that missing player. And you got to let them decide for themselves really what's truth and what's not truth.
Phrased that way, I can't entirely disagree with you. You have a valid point. But I think I would still come down on the other side for two big reasons. One,
you're part of the pro GM union.
The Game Master's got enough to do. It's already the Game Master's job to secure a location, figure out who's going to show up, coordinate out of game actions, write the game.
Don't do any of that.
Because you're lazy.
Including write the game.
Yeah. Players serve
you
me.
Guys
they,
write
they
more
pick
the game
the plays,
than I do.
They bring me food. They massage my feet. They do all that kind of stuff.
Look,
and I
just
sit there and run the game.
I'm telling you what my historic experience has been. And in talking to other people, they say generally their historic experience has been
it's all about
everything
management falls
on the GM. The last thing the GM needs
delegating to
do is, in addition to that, also have to catch them back up. The second problem.
See, I don't even do that.
Yeah, I know. Because
learn from me,
I know,
Dan.
Because you have found.
You don't even run the session, Chad. You just kind of let the players direct the action.
Yeah.
You sit back there and say yes or no.
Yeah.
He's found vast amounts of laziness and his mass is under euphemisms such as improv and collaboration.
I know, and everybody thinks it's so like cutting edge.
Look, it works. I'm not naive about what's going on here, but it works.
Yeah. The people tell me they're having fun
when the cardboard cutout looks real on screen.
Yeah,
Chad is the PT Barnum of game mastering.
Let me ask you this, Dan: the world we're playing in, who wrote it?
Yeah, all of us did.
Yeah. Who gives the recaps every session?
Yeah, all of us do.
Who picked out our location?
Pat did.
Who drives me to the game?
Wayne does.
Yeah. So.
What the hell do you do?
Yeah.
When we're in combat.
And when we're in combat, who tells, who dictates the rules, who runs the combat, who writes his encounters, people on the forums.
Exactly, exactly. You know, we still have not given
Veta Valetavatum
credit for that. I promised we would talk about her combat she designed for you guys on the show, so we have got to talk about that at some point.
Well, so she did design an encounter that we fought through, which was, was that the Knolls?
That was the Knolls
we fought. Okay, we'll come back to that.
We'll do a banter topic. The point is, we got to do that.
The point is, the two issues I have with that is, one, as I said, I think in the average group, the GM has too much to do as it is. The second thing is, as a GM, if I'm recapping what happened last game, I already come into that game forward-looking, trying to figure out what they're about to do and how I have to respond to that. If I'm looking back to last game, typically where I'm going to go to do that is my notes. And in looking at my notes, I may have trouble remembering, number one, the things they did that are in my notes, because my notes are not a leash. My notes are a guide. And secondly is, and I've done this, as I said earlier, I let slip plot information by accident. And I've done this several times where the players have not pieced together that A is B, but because I'm reading off my notes where it says B comes along, I'll just say, oh, yeah. And then the group ran into B and the group will be like, that was B.
What?
Oh, crap.
I've done that in this.
There
in
went the big
game.
Give.
Yeah.
And so I have completely torpedoed myself. And Chris, you make the point, and it is a fair point, that as the old joke goes, you put 10 people in a room, you have 11 opinions. If you have a group of four players and they run into a guy, it is entirely possible the odd man out, that fourth guy, may have had a contrary opinion about that encounter to the other three players. But I think as a whole, parties tend to form their own sort of gestalt of superstitions and paranoia. And I think more often than not, if all three people saw one guy and none of them trusted him, probably the fourth guy wouldn't either. And therefore, I think a stilted player response is completely fair, because if that person had been there, they would have been exposed to that social pressure of paranoia from the rest of the group.
I think it's more than just fair.
Wait, hold on. Hold on a second. Little Mac, that's not bad.
Pat is about to
Pat's going to speak? Yeah. All right.
Pat goes first.
Chris, you don't talk much either, so note your point. But this is a rare occasion. It's on my calendar. Go ahead, Pat.
I think that it's more than a fair representation. And I actually sort of completely disagree with Chris and what he was saying. I think that it's needed to have that sort of, I would think of it as a groupthink mentality, to be exposed to what they thought, as opposed to the more antiseptic recap of the GM. Because like what you just said, when you encounter these things, the emotions are going to be there. If you are not given that experience, then you really are not getting
what the player would have expected.
Yeah, what the player would have encountered in that last session. So I think that it's better to come from the players than the GM for that very reason.
That's what I was saying. I take it one step further. If you miss a session, you have to acknowledge your character may have thought and done things that it wouldn't have done if you were there. And I think with the players giving the recap, players telling you, here's what happened, you get more of, okay, well, here's what happened from their perspective, versus here's what happened from someone who actually knows what's going on.
I think a GM that doesn't present how the characters reacted to certain situations in that recap, I think that GM is not doing their job, because that clearly was a part of what happened. You've got to present that information.
That's harder said than done. The GM can sit there and say, oh, yeah, the party didn't like these guys.
Yeah.
But you're not, as a GM, you're not going to sit there and say, why? I mean, I'm taking this to the extreme.
Those players are not going to sit there and go, that's right. No, they're going to speak up, damn it. They're going to say, yeah, that guy was a total douchebag, and here's why. And that's what they should do.
You heard the man.
I didn't hear a word you said, Pat. I was too busy trying to talk over.
We can tell.
Oh, wow. No kidding.
You know what? Normally I try to edit out when we do massive crosstalk. That one's getting left in.
Seriously, what did you say, Pat? I have no idea what you said.
He told you to shut the up.
God.
All right, Pat. Re-rage.
Oh, man.
I think he's spent.
I'm flabbergasted because I can't remember what I was trying to say, because He just wouldn't shut up.
You said that you were taking it to an extreme.
Well, and I was going to say, I'm taking it to the extreme case where, like, you would be taking this player aside, removed from the other players, and telling him, this is what happened. I don't think that's usually going to happen, maybe, but if that's what you were doing, and you describe to the absent player that, oh yeah, they encountered this this NPC or this person, and they just didn't like him, that's all you're really going to say. You're not really going to get into the finer points of why they didn't like him, and this, that, and the other. On the other hand, whenever the people that were there, they talk about the same situation, and they say, oh yeah, oh my God, he did this, and then he called, you know, our character a slut, and he was just a total dirk, you know, just a total dick, and we hate him for this, that, and the other reason. Yeah, I'm flustered. I can't help it. So, you know, you're going to get that raw emotion, and that is really what it's all about. I mean, you know, the RP that you really get into, it's about emotions.
Absolutely.
So
I think that's where you're going to get it. I think it does need to be, it's got to be collaborative, but somebody's got to take the lead, and fine, if a player wants to take the lead, that's cool. But the GM then in that case really should watch out for biases like that, because they are going to color some things that, you know, and if the GM is aware of the absent character's personality or outlook on life, they should try and pay attention to how that character really might have reacted in that situation
perspective. That bias is coming from the other players. That's perfectly justified. Yeah. And that's just the way it is. And the GM has no business to sit there and tell the absentee person, no, your character would have thought this about this
and
person.
And by doing so, they're hurting the bias that the players have created.
Well, I also think the game master can get in a situation where you've got two options of either you have to couch everything you say in this political phrasing of the players think that, or the one time you don't or you do, it sticks out as an exception. Example from an Apaka Risos game, there was, I'm not going to bore with the long story, but there was a...
and 1,000 people just groaned.
Yeah.
Well, not because you. It's just like, no, I want you to bore us with a long story.
There was a ship from a place, we'll just call the Republic, it's a short name of the place, but there's a ship from the Republic that they thought had done
the Rebels?
No. They thought had done a certain thing to the party. And when a player missed and came back, they said, oh yeah, and then the crew of this Republic ship did such and such to us. Well, the truth is, that ship hadn't. It had been a completely different group. But the players didn't know about it. Well, if I had told that story and say, well, they're under the impression a Republic ship did such and such, well, the players are going to be like, well, wait a minute, why are we, quote unquote, under the impression? Mm-hmm. Conversely, if I say the Republic did do such and such as a game master, I'm presenting false information.
That's a good point.
I'm lying. If I say the Republic,
oh, I lie to you guys all the time.
If I say the Republic didn't do it, I'm revealing plot.
Yeah, and by doing that, you're reinforcing the wrong thing if you do that, yeah. Because we look to you as the law.
And so I'm just screwed any way I do it.
Yeah. But not necessarily, because if during the session, if you knew as a GM the whole time that these guys were like, yep, it was Republic, if you, the GM, are the one who's going to recap next week, I wouldn't even mention that fact, and I would leave it open-ended enough so that the players bring up that information. So then, yeah, so then you're right, because you don't want to present false information, and you don't want to say they're under the impression it was a Republic ship, because then everyone's going to go, well, it wasn't a Republic ship then. But you can word it in a way that still sounds normal, still, in a certain sense, deceives your players or makes them think from what last week what they thought was right, and it allows that game to continue without revealing that particular plot point.
I still fall on the side that I want the player... Well, okay, first, we're talking about the finer art of recaps in a game. Not every game needs a recap. Not every group needs recaps. Personally, I prefer recaps. I prefer the players to do the recaps. Yes, all the jokes about laziness are true. But I also like the players to do recaps because it tells me what's grabbed them. I know what they have totally missed. In our current game, for example, they left a town. The very, very first thing that happened in the very, very first game after they had done this sort of play thing was they left town. Something happened when they left town, and they missed it. The reason I know they missed it is because they didn't mention it in the recaps. And it is somewhat come up again and again, and they don't mention it. And so I know that either they're not getting it because they're dumb, which they're not, or I'm not presenting it enough, which is what is going on. And so as the game has progressed, I have done other things to present that hook, that point, that whatever MacGuffin, whatever you want to call it, to get that back in there. And because they have been telling me this, now it's in there more naturally. And the players don't know it, because if I had been giving the recap, I would have mentioned that thing. Mm-hmm. And it would have been just, boom, there it is. And it wouldn't have hurt the game in any way. It wouldn't have been a bad thing. But this way, I can more subtly slip it in sideways and slip it in a different way and slip it in a better way and slip it in a more sensuous way.
Oh,
Pat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, keep that.
Yeah.
That's right.
Hey, Dan, two things, because I want to get back to that one point that you told me to hold, because it may or may not steer the conversation in a different direction. But two things. One, first of all, I think your hand-waving about holidays being difficult for gaming, I think, is incorrect in the sense that it shows the signs of where you're at in life. Because when I was a teenager, holidays rocked for gaming. Those were the absolute best times for gaming.
Yeah, still. Dude, even in our teen years and college years, it still killed us. Because we had so many obligations.
Not me, man. Holidays was like, it was free and clear. Our group was able to get together. It was awesome.
Between family trips, church things, school things, whatever. I mean, you name it, on the road. It didn't matter. Any age.
I had holidays a big family.
See, not for me, though. You had your family meal requirement. You had your gifts and all that. Once that event stuff was done and everything was starting to wind down, that was the time to game.
Holidays. Cars have been invented since then, Chris. We have to travel now.
See, holidays with no familial significance, things like spring break. Oh, yeah. That was gaming paradise. But no, Thanksgiving through New Year's was a black hole from which ship returned.
My problem with it, and actually this is the reason I don't really care for Christmas, is because Christmas is not a 1 or 2 day event. Christmas lasts from Thanksgiving to New Year's. I have a big family. I have a very large, I mean, I don't have any brothers or sisters, but my family is very large. And it was ongoing. It just went on and on and on, and all these events and all these different things I did. And when you look at your dad and you're 15 years old and your dad says, this weekend we're going to Aunt X's house for Christmas.
Yeah, you don't get to say no.
Yeah, you can't say, well, Dad, I'm gaming with my buddies.
Or if you've got a school play, or you've got a musical cantata at church that, you know, you may not necessarily have a choice about being in, or maybe you do and you want to be in it. I mean, whatever the case is, this stuff starts to wreck your time. But Chris, I guess I see your point in that, depending on your situation, for some people, this may be the one time when they don't have school, they don't have work, all their buddies are in town. Maybe for some people, this is a gaming opportunity. For us, historically, I mean, this has just been the French Revolution. I mean,
oh, sure.
It's just been a blood in the streets. You can certainly see how that
would be very difficult for some people. But you said something, kind of, when we're talking about approaches and talking about presentation of notes and all that, but you said something about your approaches, your drive into the game session, which I found interesting, because you look at getting ready for the game session that night from a GM's perspective in a very different way than I do. You said that your approach is trying to figure out how you're going to deal with what they give to you and what they're going to do to you as players when you get into the session. That's where your mindset is coming from. When I'm going into the game session that night, and you and I are similar in our level of note-taking and planning and writing out, so this is where I find this very interesting. Right. My approach going into this is, I'm thinking, how am I going to get the players to go where I would like them to go that evening? Whereas you're more concerned about where they're going to direct you, I'm more concerned about how I'm going to direct them. Now, granted, that may or may not work out on either end of the spectrum, but you take it from a very philosophical, different approach than I do. And I'm wondering if that is coloring your perception of who should really be doing the note presenting here or the recap presenting.
You may very well be right, because of the fact that I'm allowing them, or even encouraging, a certain amount of levity, that perhaps does change the way that I approach and change my ability to recap a prior game, because once again, I'm operating from notes that may or may not line up with what happened. As for going into a game, I think I'm somewhat frazzled away from thinking about what happened in the past, simply because, I'm looking forward to a list of possibilities, accepting that I can't predict everything they're going to do, but trying to figure out, you know, how am I going to keep this night together and moving with all these possible ways they might respond to things they may or may not learn and such. And see, I have no doubt that the philosophy of my approach to GMing probably does affect my ability to recap. If I, for example, use notes that were a little bit, I don't want to say linear because it sounds so derisive, but it's the only word that's coming to mind, that my notes were a little bit more specific, or perhaps I had more of a sense of a bendy line of, you're going to see these points, the only question is where and how, then yeah, it might be easier for me to do a recap because my notes would be sufficient. All I'd have to do is kind of recontext them, but whatever I had in the notes from last week, that is indeed what they encountered. But the way I run my games, my notes, I mean, Wayne can attest, a couple episodes ago when I put up the resource documents of a copy of my game notes from Skies of Glass game, Wayne was quick to comment either on the forums or in a private comment to me, I don't remember which. He said to me, like, wow, that is not at all how that game went. And so, Wayne, you can see there is no way I could have recapped that game from those notes. No, there's no way I could have done
it. We didn't at all do what you thought we would do that week. It's no big surprise. I mean, anytime you're gaming with Chad and he's a player, you never know what he's going to do. He's good at coming up
I'm wild and crazy.
But exactly.
Right. I mean, yeah, and I think I've gotten better as a GM that my notes now allow for that. But yeah, the result is, Chris, it would be very hard for me to do something like that. And maybe it is a philosophy difference.
Would any of you ever consider actually putting a recorder down on the table and just recording the session and giving it to the person if they're the kind of person that would actually listen to it and want to do that?
I wouldn't, just because I think that it would be almost impossible to listen to. There's too much non-gaming breaks going on, and this almost sounds like our company line on gaming stories, but to have to sit there and listen to all the fun and BS that everyone else went through that wasn't game-related is not fun the week after.
You know my biggest problem? I would probably take the file and start editing it. I'd start chuffing out the spaces and try to give them a more concise version of what happened without all the spaces and things.
I would consider it if I knew the person would actually listen to it. But I think in our group, I think most of us wouldn't listen to it because one,
when do you have the time?
Bingo.
Yeah, to sit down and listen to a 4 to 6 hour recording.
My case, not a problem at all.
Maybe longer. I mean,
I do it all the time. I have constantly while I'm working, I have it on my iPod and I'm listening.
This is where I say it depends on the person. Sure. I think for the average person, yeah, Pat's right. A 4 to 6 to 8 to longer hour game session, most people are not going to listen to it. They're going to zone in and out while they're listening to it.
That definitely I would do.
Yeah. I don't know about per se not being able to buy into the fun, because I think since it's your friends, it's easier to put yourself in that situation to buy into what was going on. So I guess it would really depend on the person. I think for most people in this group, no, I wouldn't bother. Wayne, maybe you're an exception where you actually would go back and listen to it. So maybe there would be a point to bringing the DVR, digital voice recorder here, not digital video recorder, but to bringing the digital voice recorder to get the session and to give it to you afterwards, because you actually would listen to it.
Yeah. You know, we did this a couple times in my gaming group in the past. The funny thing is, I don't know if anyone ever actually listened to it. And I'm not exactly sure why we recorded it. It may have been because somebody was absent, or maybe they were just trying to record a session. I don't remember. But this is back in the day of before really the digital voice recorders. It was the micro cassette recorders. So I think we went through like 2 or 3 of those tapes, you know, recording the session.
People,
but I don't know what we did. Yeah.
Yeah.
We had wax discs.
I know.
You know, people ask us all the time to do actual plays of our games. Never, never. And the response I give people is that, some paraphrasing something Dan said, Fear the Boot is not a testament to how great we are. Fear the Boot is 15 years of gaming failure and the lessons we have learned from
it. Hey, speak for yourself. I only have 2 years of failure.
True enough, noob.
The only thing that makes us different,
fail more, Wayne,
than any other terrible gaming group, is the fact that we are honest about our terribleness.
Yes.
We know how stupid we are. That's the only thing that makes, take the worst gaming group you know and make them honest, and that's us.
When it comes to the recap, length of time-wise, do you wait until the next session? Do you call the guy the next day? I mean, because obviously you're going to encounter your fellow gaming party members at some point during that week. Obviously, you're going to talk about the session. Certainly, the absent player is going to want to know right away. Would you set a policy of sorts to where you say, no, I don't talk about it until the next Sunday? Or do you just, you know, whatever, and just go ahead and just talk about it and try and recap, you know, essentially in a casual way without being around the table?
I would say an informal rule would just be to wait until the next session, because that's when you're going to have all your players together. But that's going from the way I want to do it, which is the players doing the recap.
This current game we have, Wayne is in it, of course, because Wayne's part of our gaming group, and Wayne and I sit next to each other at work. There's a cue ball separating us. if I come in Monday, as long as Wayne's not busy, I think you would expect me to give you a recap of what you had missed.
And it's all situational. Like you said, in that case, you do have that ability, but maybe other groups, they don't see each other except that, you know, that time during the week.
We drive the people we work around us absolutely crazy because we are constantly talking about gaming, and I'm not a quiet person. I don't have quiet inside voice. And so the whole office hears.
For me, it'd be a time issue. I mean, I struggle with the game running as it is, especially with the way my job is clowning me right now to keep up with even preparing any amount of game notes. Mm. So I don't think I'd have time to do a recap between game sessions. I am really thankful that Scott was able to do it for Carla. I hope that somebody else will be able to do it for Scott between weeks because I don't have the time. Yeah. But yeah, I think I'm also with Pat in that I'd rather do it at the games because it's a great way of doing that icebreaker.
Yeah, I think, honestly, I like the idea of the quick recap, and I think it should be quick, 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't have to be hard, fast, but, you know, you're shooting for
a lot of information in 5 minutes.
In 5 minutes, you're going to get the gist of what was done. I think it's a great tool because, and I haven't really done it largely until this game with you, Chad, but I think it's a fantastic idea because it allows us to, even though I was there last week and I pretty much remember, there will still be things of, oh yeah, I forgot that little detail that somebody, that Wayne remembered or that Dan remembered. And I can do the same thing for them.
We're completionists. We always correct each other as we're doing it.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. You guys correct each other and it reminds me. It gets me in the mood. And I think that Dan brought up an excellent point earlier that we kind of ran past, is that when you sit down with a gaming group, it's just like, hey, everybody pulls up and we got the snacks out and everyone gets their water. We're talking about work. We're bitching about spouses. We're talking about whatever. Actually, we don't ever bitch about
spouses. No, actually, we don't. So I'm like, oh, great. We're in trouble for something we don't even do.
Yeah, no. It's like, actually, we don't do that.
So you get together your friends and bitch about us? No, we don't. I don't know why.
Oh, boy.
So, well, I mean, you guys know what I mean. We're not talking about
there,
the game.
Good recovery.
Let's be more honest. We talk about WoW.
Yeah. Well, Pat does.
No, so, Wayne brought it up last time. I swear to God, I didn't say a word about it. And all of a sudden he said, and I'm like,
this is your fault, Dan. You brought it up this time.
Wait a minute. We do bitch about our spouses, but it's our gaming spouses. Yes, it's not our marital spouses.
Yes. So anyway, we're talking about stuff that has nothing to do with the game because we're socializing. We're catching up. We're friends. We talk. And it's a great way to say, stop. Okay, talk about the game.
Yeah.
And then you spend 5 minutes talking about the game, trying to remember, trying to recall it. And then people are... People are fact checking you as you're talking about it too. So works out well.
We got a topic we didn't get to, which is no problem at all because it gives us some notes for next time. But I do want to close this out with one thought that I had here in my notes on this subject, which is one of the commandments of Fear the Boot regarding gaming is
we have those.
We do. Such as, for example,
I've seen the stone tablets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He actually broke the first set.
No, I think he made them, didn't he?
You know, for example, we often say...
15 commandments.
10 commandments.
For example, one of the things that we always say is that the only way to win at gaming is to have fun.
Yeah.
One of our other cardinal commandments here of gaming is real life comes first.
Yes.
Now, I want to emphasize that real life comes first.
And we all know gaming is real life. Yeah. So
if your group says that and means it, then one thing I would urge you not to do is to punish someone for the crime of missing a game session. I'm not talking about a habitual skipper or someone who can't make concerns a priority. I'm not talking about that. But if somebody has to miss a game, when they come back, if they're talking to the prince and they accidentally make a big social flub because they weren't there when the party first met him last game to realize he hates the color yellow or something, stop and say, no, your character would know that he can't stand the color yellow. Put your canary away. Or
is that what we're calling it now?
I just went away.
Find a cure for that jaundice, would you?
But whether it's an RP thing, whether it's a plot thing, whatever it is, don't punish this person for having missed a game. It's not going to kill you to kind of back up, to catch them up, to give them a little bit of leeway for having taken time for the real life. So we will come back next time. We're going to talk about some stuff with Fear the Con. It looks like if we stick to our outline here, the next topic we're going to talk about is... actually, I won't tell anyone.
Bastard.
All right, so...
Tease.
We'll come back next time to talk about Fear the Con 4 and to finish out the rest of this outline. So you guys have a great week, and I hope that the holidays are kinder to your games than they are to ours. And we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Later, Dave.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2010. Listeners are free to use the show in a non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.